Thanks very much for joining us here this Saturday morning on WWNC 570, the Talk of the Mountains. Previous to the break, we were talking about insurance, but during the break, I swear, some of the best things happen. the best radio happens, between the segments. We just learned
it's the stuff that's off air that people have no idea about.
Agnes just told us that she's a rider. She's a bike rider. I would not have guessed necessarily, and that she knows how to do wheelies, folks. So be careful out there.
Yes, but since you were speaking about insurance, it's costly to keep it on a bunch of cars and motorcycles. So wrecking them is not something I want
right.
to do.
And, I guess those wheelies were off road, just in case the police are listening. But
of course.
Anyway, I just think that's pretty cool because I ride as well. So we didn't know that we had that in common.
Well, that's very cool.
All right. So before the break, we were talking about some of the structural problems or potential problems with universal life insurance. And just to finish that up real quickly, one of the additional problems that I see is that with a universal life policy, with all the flexibility that's built into the policy, the insurer usually reserves the right to increase the mortality rates. The mortality rates are the charges that you incur to compensate the insurer for bearing the risk that you're going to die in any given year. So those mortality rates go up year by year by year because you get older, which makes sense. But the problem is, in my view, that the typical universal life insurance policy has two sets of rates. It has the current set of rates and a maximum guaranteed set, which is usually going to be substantially higher than the current rates. Now, the problem that I have with it is that even though the current rates could be very low and favorable, you have to remember that when you enter into the contract with an insurance company, no matter how friendly the person who sold you that policy is, that person is an agent for the company, and that company is your counterparty. That person is sitting across the table from you, or that entity, and its interests do not necessarily mesh with your interests. So if that insurer runs into financial hiccups or it has balance sheet problems, it has kind of built into that policy, I shouldn't say kind of, it has built into a universal life policy wiggle room so that it can increase the premiums. Now, I would much prefer to take, let's say, just a traditional pure term insurance policy and know what the policy premium is and have it set for 5 or 10 or 20 years or whatever the period is, and just walk away knowing that it's done and not necessarily taking the current premium rate schedule from an insurer, hoping that bad things don't happen and that the insurance company isn't forced to raise the mortality rates. So that's an additional thing to keep in mind, along with the fact that some policies actually give the insurance company the right to, in essence, refigure the formula that applies to how much interest is credited to the policy. So even though you're buying a policy that is going to pay some interest based on some index or whatever it may be, you have to beware for the potential that the policy might also include a provision for the insurance company to change it. So if the insurance company can change that provision, knowing that the insurer is your counterparty, for my part, it doesn't fill me with a lot of self-confidence knowing that the entity that can toggle the variable switches is the entity who has an interest that may run counter to mine. So basically, those are my reservations when it comes to universal life insurance. I'm not saying to never buy the policy or any kind of policy like that. My advice is just to be very careful and to look into the details and make sure you really understand those details before you commit. Because once you do, you really have undertaken a long-term commitment and it's going to be costly if you want to get out. So what else do you have in the mailbag, Alice?
Well, Glenn, I don't think we have enough time for the remaining questions. So How about if we save those for the next show and instead you could tell the listeners more about the simulation modeling process you offer people?
All right. We've got a couple of minutes left here. We use a simulation modeling process that helps us determine what a reasonably shaped portfolio might look like. We can, through that process, rule out many times overly aggressive portfolios for people who have substantial assets where they don't necessarily need to take a lot of risk. And for people who are less well fixed financially, that modeling process helps us rule out overly conservative portfolios that might make them feel placated in the near term, knowing that they have a really nice, safe, steady, stable portfolio, but that is pretty well likely going to lead them to running out of money when they're, 20 years down the road. So this process is very, very robust in that it allows us to focus on something that the industry calls sequence of return risk. A lot of financial planning programs, for instance, if you have someone do a financial plan for you, very oftentimes they're going to be using cookie cutter software, which could be powerful software in its own right, but the modeling process to figure out how well you may be fixed over the rest of your life is simplified. So if you've ever had a financial plan done where the financial planner assumes that you earn, let's say, 9% on a 50-50 mix of stocks and bonds or, some other portfolio. The problem with that, which came to light very apparently in 2001, is that if you have, if you sustain great losses early in your retirement, your portfolio can't really recover from that. So it matters not that your portfolio might actually earn 9% per year when you look back 30 years in your rearview mirror. It's not going to make much difference if you retire in 1999 and at the end of 2001, your portfolio is down by 35% and you are expecting 9% every year. So the simulation modeling process that we use is very robust in that it uses a statistical process that runs thousands of iterations and averages them and gives you kind of a look like the way a hurricane might hit the United States. It could hit as high as Maine or as low as Florida. We have a similar process with our model that tells us that you could have as much as this much money or as little as that much money, but the probabilistic range is right in this area, right in the middle. So anyway, that wraps us up for this week. I'm very glad that you were able to join us this morning. We will be back next week. I hope you tune in here on Investor IQ. Thank you.